The Tom Woods Show, episode 522.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Friends, if you're planning to buy gold, make sure you don't get ripped off. There are a lot of scams out there. So read Peter Schiff's report, Classic Gold Scams and How to Avoid Getting Ripped Off. You can read it for free through tomwoods.com/scams. If you're like me, you have no graphic design skills, but you need a lot of graphics designed. Well, check out Moon Pixlar, which creates beautiful graphics for you without the frustration and without emptying your wallet. Check it out at tomwoods.com/moon. Welcome to the post-debate analysis that you have come to expect after these GOP presidential debates here in the 2016 presidential season. Of course, I am joined, as always, by Lou Rockwell, who is founder and chairman of the Mises Institute, which you should visit at Mises.org, M-I-S-E-S.org. Done more than any other institution in the world to shape the person I am and gave me tremendous opportunities. Lou's been a great benefactor of mine over the years. I couldn't be happier to talk to him today. Lou was also, of course, chief of staff to Ron Paul. He's got accomplishments coming out his ears. So I'm very glad to talk to him. And of course, when Lou and I talk about these debates, it's not a stilted interview style. We're just having a conversation. So I did actually have somebody say, you talk too much when you're talking to Lou, but we're just chit-chatting like we would be talking on the phone. I mean, what we're saying when we meet for these post-debate shows is exactly what we would say on the telephone to each other. And that's just how I like it, a regular conversation, not a stilted list of questions, you know, like I'm Mike Wallace or something. What fun would that be? So anyway, here we go. Lou, welcome back to the show.
Tom, great to be with you.
This is always fun, isn't it? And I said at that Dallas Mises event just a few weeks ago that I have a lot of people who tell me they're not interested in politics and blah, 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 but the download numbers don't lie. And when you come on here to talk about these debates with me, I get some of the best download numbers ever. So somebody's lying to us. Somebody out there agrees with us that, yeah, we wish the whole spectacle didn't have to exist, but as long as it's there, we can't look away.
No, and we, at least we can laugh at it, right?
Yeah, I mean, you got to get something, that. Right? At least we get something. And you know what was funny is there was a little bit of a trend on Twitter yesterday of people saying, thank goodness I don't have to watch the debate because Tom and Lou will watch it for me.
Oh,
and in fact, Justin Raimondo tweeted out, can you believe I have to watch another one of these debates? And another person said, no, you don't, because Tom's going to watch it. Okay. All right. We had 10 people on the debate stage last night. I didn't watch the undercard debate. I assume you didn't.
I did not.
Okay. Okay. So that I wasn't going to give you an extra credit assignment. I thought it was enough just to watch this. But I wrote down some notes as usual. What's your overall impression? I mean, again, we're not saying so-and-so is a good guy or bad guy, but just in terms of whose fortunes may have risen and whose may have fallen as a result of the debate.
Well, first of all, I think the CNBC's fortunes have fallen. In fact, the whole cable news business has probably taken a hit from this. And, of course, building on what Megyn Kelly did and the others, this is, at least among Republicans, Republicans all hate the media, and that was certainly stoked last night. As you know, Bush, of course, is a loser. Rand's a loser. I thought that Carson was probably the guy who dropped the most. I noticed on the Drudge poll, he's down below, you know, below Rubio and below Rand. He's not number two anymore. Cruz is number two on the Drudge poll. And I think Cruz, Trump, is the main victor in this. Kasich, of course, who was like the, I don't know, the door-to-door encyclopedia salesman from hell who puts his shoe in and prevents you from closing it and keeps talking to you about things you just couldn't care less about. Fiorina lost. And the more people see of her, the more they don't like her, and it probably doesn't help as somebody, as a lady wrote to me last night, she said, her hair wouldn't be moving if Hurricane Patricia were going through the room. And so if you look at her, so I looked at a clip, and of course it's true. It's like it's a frozen, very funny.
I didn't have that in my notes, actually, but now that you mention it.
So it's You know, I think Christie, of course, was a loser, but he was already a loser. Huckabee's a loser. He was already a loser. But Bush really dropped. Bush is down to 0.5%, whereas Trump is at, this is 250,000 votes on Drudge. Trump is at, you know, more than 50%. And Cruz, 22%. So he's really gone up. The others, all the rest of them are losers. And maybe this is, if the losers aren't out of the next debate formally, I think clearly last night they were out of it. And I don't care how much they pump up Rubio. The neocons were saying this morning in the Weekly Standard, wow, you know, Rubio, he's got the same kind of natural political ability Bill Clinton has. Well, you know, first of all, Bill Clinton was very smart, and of course he was a brilliant politician. Rubio's a dope. And I think, you know, the more and more people get to know him, the more that comes through. He just doesn't – he's not smart.
He's a good memorizer.
He can memorize things. So they, for example, said, Hillary must be shaking in her boots when she heard him say things like, I'm against anything that hurts my mother. Well, you know, this is a memorized line. This is not something he came up with just on the spur of the moment. Whereas Cruz, not a Cruz fan, but Cruz was able to take what happened in the debate and formulate a great statement on it.
He was extremely effective. And I have not been a Cruz fan from the start. I thought it was a mistake to endorse him. Especially when in the Texas Senate race, Glenn Addison was a Ron Paulian and should have been endorsed instead.
Horrible.
If you had to endorse anybody. And so now the whole Cruz endorsement is absolutely coming to back to bite Rand in the you-know-where. So, I mean, I tried telling them. I mean, I did try. I even talked to Rand about this on the Peter Schiff show. Why didn't you endorse Glenn Addison? But anyway, that's water under the bridge at this point. But you're right. Cruz is extremely effective. And that line he had, that little, they called it a rant in the news media, of course, but where he just ran down all the different types of questions that were being asked, it was so effective. And not only was it effective because he was mostly correct about it, but he knows that connects with the audience. So well. So definitely Cruz. I wrote that down for sure. And I just wrote down Cruz, extremely effective. I will dissent from you on one particular. I thought Christie's line about fantasy football was very effective because it showed the difference between Bush and anybody you might want to support. Because there's Bush saying, you know, maybe we do need to regulate fantasy football, which is a thing he admits he himself does. And then he's standing around saying, well, you know, maybe we do need to regulate it. And Christie says, what in the world are you talking about? Of all the things in the world to worry about, you're going to talk about fantasy football? I actually like that line.
Well, Christie, I thought, was just looking at it in, out of context. He did a very good job last night. He was clear. He was well-spoken. He looked at the camera. He gave intelligible and intelligent statements. He's got 0.5% in the Drudge poll, and that, you know, he's going nowhere. He's a total zero as far as the election is concerned. He's a smart guy. He said funny things about even by New Jersey standards, you're being rude.
Yes, that was funny.
He had a number of funny comments, but it doesn't do him any good.
Right.
He can just go home, go back on the George Washington Bridge or whatever. He's out of there.
Let's say something about Rubio. Rubio had a confrontation with Jeb over the number of votes he's missed because he's been on the campaign trail. And Jeb was suggesting that maybe he might consider resigning, given that he can't devote himself to the job he was elected to do. And Rubio came back and hit him with not only, look, all these other people missed a lot of votes. John McCain missed a lot of votes. You didn't criticize him, and this one missed a lot of votes, and so on and on. And the line that was effective was, the only reason you're attacking me is that somebody told you it would benefit you to attack me. That was an effective line because it leaves people with the idea that Bush is a puppet. And so that was effective. But otherwise, I didn't see... I can't get into the heads of a lot of GOP voters. I didn't see why people would roar with approval as he's going on ticking off all the other people who've missed a lot of votes. I think it made him look kind of stupid.
Well, as somebody else, a number of people have pointed out, the key thing is Bush was not able to answer Rubio.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have said something like, so you're comparing yourself to Obama and John Kerry as a vote misser? Oh, well, you know, thanks a lot. But you know what? I wasn't their constituent. you're betraying the people of Florida by not doing your job. Yeah. So I say again to you, either do your job or resign.
Yeah. Now, that would have been great, but basically
but he's
Bush
not capable.
No, he's not, no. And he's not capable of thinking on his feet either, because he had been given the line to say about Rubio, but he hadn't been given any follow-up.
No, it was...
As long as Rubio says nothing, you'll be fine.
Well, you know what? It had always been said that he was the smart guy in the Bush family, but...
Oh, my gosh.
I think that turns out not to be true. I'm not a fan of W, but W had political smarts.
And
as political.
Yeah, and I think he would have fought back. I think he would have shot back.
I think Rubio only looked good because, you know,
because
he's nothing. Of course, on the fantasy football thing, I wish somebody had made the point that this is only an issue because Sheldon Adelson doesn't like the fact that it's cutting into his casinos.
Oh,
and he's paying off people like you, Marco, who get big donations from Sheldon in order to try to attack fantasy football. Let us have our game. Let the American people have their game.
Okay, the only person who could remotely have said that would have been Trump, and he just stayed out of it.
No. Yeah, he obviously made the decision, and I must say it makes it less fun, but, his life and his decision, to sort of tone it down a little bit, to dial it back a little bit.
Yeah.
But he came across, I think, as the adult, and he was very effective, and all the online polls show him massively the winner.
Well, his...
Time Magazine and... All of them.
Yeah. I mean, the one person he really did go after was Kasich.
But Kasich, of course, attacked him first.
Oh, that is true. That is true. But
As he says, he doesn't go after anybody unless they attack him first.
Yeah, okay. You're right. I stand corrected. But his attack on Kasich was so funny because he said, and then when he started to go down in the polls, and by the way, that's why he's so far out in the end, because of how low he is, then he got nasty. And so Trump brought up, he said that Ohio's doing well because of fracking. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, maybe.
And, big fracking industry there. I don't know either, but...
But it was funny. And then he said he brought up the Lehman Brothers connection. Now, Kasich was not as high up as maybe Trump is indicating, but he was at Lehman Brothers. It's not an entirely unfair shot.
Well, I heard somebody, an ex-Wall Street guy, say, it was unfair because he wasn't actually running Lehman Brothers. Of course, he wasn't running Lehman Brothers, but he had that title... even though he was just a bond salesman or whatever. So he has to accept that. He can't say, well, I was really the janitor, even though they called me the vice president.
Lehman Brothers
had... For him to answer, you know, I was a banker and I'm proud of it. Has to be one of the stupidest things ever said. All Americans hate bankers, and especially now.
Absolutely. And in fact, of course, if Lehman Brothers had done extremely well during those years, what, is Kasich not going to boast about that? So, if it goes down, of course, he's going to pretend this, what are you talking about?
Who brothers? Yeah.
Exactly. All right. There was a lot of talk about tax reform last night. And tax reform, if it doesn't make chills go down your spine, then you haven't been paying attention. It never means anything other than they're going to try to get more money from you, but in a slightly different way. That's what it always means. It doesn't mean a lower tax take. Now, maybe it is possible. I haven't looked at the details of it enough. Maybe you have, Lou. But it's possible that Trump's plan could, in fact, lead to lower revenue. But I don't think anybody else's is really going to lead to lower revenue. They're all trying to be revenue neutral.
The rest of them aim for revenue neutrality. And I wish Trump, when they say, $10 trillion, it's too much, I wish he could say, so $10 trillion over 10 years is too much for the producers, for the American people who make everything happen. Ben Bernanke in 1 year spent $12 trillion to bail out the bankers, the big banks in Europe. So you're okay with that, of course, John, but you don't want the American people getting any money.
Yeah, see? Lou, the people who could do a good job on that debate stage are legion, but they ain't getting anywhere near it, unfortunately. All right, well, I did listen to, now I haven't looked at the...
Also, by the way, I know Rand has been running away from libertarianism his whole career, but I kept thinking, imagine if rather than these impenetrable answers that he was giving, and I had trouble understanding,
horrible.
So I know everybody else tuned out, if he just said, look, we have to have taxes, because we have to have national defense or whatever excuse he would give. But, you know, let's stop and think. Let's not talk on this in the abstract. This is the government coming to you with a gun and saying, I'm deciding how much of your earnings I'm taking for what I want to do, and if you don't pay it, I'm putting you in jail and maybe I'll kill you. So don't we have more than enough of that kind of conduct in society? Isn't it morally imperative that we cut taxes? Yes, it's economically necessary. Yes, it's politically a very good idea. But it's what this present tax system, also, by the way, the U.S. government is the biggest, richest, most powerful government in the history of the world. They can take a cut. It's the American, the working people of this country who can't stand a cut.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. There you go.
But he would never say anything like that. Might remind people of his dad.
Yeah, now,
although there was a funny incident last night, and of course, Cruz is attending to Needle Rand.
Yeah, I was just going to mention this. Go ahead.
And he mentioned the gold. He mentioned gold being connected to money, which I thought was a great thing. I haven't heard anybody do that since Ron. And of course, we know that Cruz, and I don't like Cruz. He's a neocon, but he's a smart, very smart guy.
Oh yeah,
he's attempting to gather up the Rand and Ron people and put them in his camp. And one of the things he said was, "And I was proud to be an original co-sponsor of Ron Paul's audit the Fed bill."
So he mentioned the name of Ron. The person who mentioned Ron Paul's name in the debate was Ted Cruz.
And positively. And then Rand, in a peevish way, said, "Well, Ted, yeah, thank you very much for being an original co-sponsor of my audit the Fed bill."
Yeah.
Now, it's true that Ron's bill, which was the original bill, was in the House. Rand was the original guy to do it in the Senate, but it wasn't his idea. It was his dad's idea. But why he was upset at, you know, you can't help yourself by being upset that your dad is being praised. You just can't.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know whether anybody was paying attention to that, whether anybody watched it. I found it shocking.
Let's say something about Rand, because obviously we have to do that. You know, at this point, I think a lot of people owe a lot of people an apology, because early on we were told, look, you know, Ron's a sweet guy and everything, but how many bills did he get passed? Like, they started adopting the very language the neocons used against him.
Yeah.
And, you know, how effective was he? And, you know, this time we're going to have to keep an eye on the grassroots, which never materialized because they're tired of being treated like garbage. And, you know, this time we're going to be a little bit more mature and respectable. And if this isn't the greatest evidence of what a flopperoo strategy that was, as I'm sorry to toot my own horn, I'm not always right. I don't always correctly predict the future. But on this one, I exactly predicted what was going to happen. He inspires zero enthusiasm. Zero. None. And people will say, when Ron would win all the online polls, oh, you know, Ron's people just sit at the computer and they take polls. No, Ron's people were around the street. They were in the editorial pages. They were reading books. They were doing all kinds of interesting things. Whereas people can't even be bothered to click a little circle on a Drudge poll for Rand. Now, why is that? And, of course, the answer will be, well, because you libertarians need absolute purity and so on and so forth. The problem is, well, there are many problems, but one of them, obviously, is he's extremely unlikable. He won't ever smile. He has zero warmth. He shows no desire to be doing any of this, so maybe he shouldn't be. If he doesn't want to, he shouldn't do it out of a grim sense of duty. Well, whatever the reason is, he shows no enthusiasm, and then when you ask him questions, he knows he's only going to get a few responses. He gives the dullest responses of the night by far. And then when he has his closing statement, so here, finally, you know you're going to get a closing statement. This one you can knock out of the park. He gives a statement that any one of those candidates could have given. Government is too big and I want it to be small. I took that closing statement to mean, I give up. I'm not interested in doing this anymore.
Well, and he talked about he's going to do one of these, another one of these phony filibusters today. As Mitch McConnell pointed out, in Politico this morning, it's not a filibuster. He's not going to allow a filibuster. But he said, people can talk about it for a day or two if they want, but then we're going to have the vote. So it wasn't good. I mean, they made fun of Ron. Despite having delegates stolen from him, despite having many things stolen from him, had no trouble having the volunteers and the money to stay in till the end. If Rand is forced out, it's going to be because he's forced out and because he doesn't have the money. and doesn't have the support, and of course is concerned, as he ought to be concerned, about staying as a senator in Kentucky.
Right.
So it's exactly right. I hope nobody puts down Ron Paul. Ron Paul is still the shining light, and in terms of principle and in terms of the way he conducted his political career. So it's only one Ron Paul.
And also, it looks to me every single Rand Paul talking point on the campaign trail or in the debates comes right out of the Tea Party. And I mean the boring, boring Tea Party, not the one that you might slightly, you know, you might connect to Ron in the early days from December 2007. But, you know, the establishment boring Tea Party that doesn't really want to cut anything. And that, you know, is as militaristic as can be. I mean, it's just boring, boring. So here's my tax plan, which is, again, shuffling things around and boring. And here's my foreign policy, which is different from yours. But when push comes to shove, yeah, we need to do this. And yeah, we need to do that. You can't figure out, you can't make head or tail of what is being said here. And if I want a Tea Party guy, I got Cruz, I got Huckabee, I have a huge variety of people to choose from. Why would I choose from this scowling guy who gives dull, wonkish answers, who seems outraged by nothing? And yes, if you're being debate coached by Randy Barnett, who is a smart guy and in the old days did write some really good Rothbardian stuff, if you're being coached by him, you are going to be a bore. You are going to sound like a law professor, which is about the last thing in the world anybody watching wants to hear.
No, it's true. By the way, on the whole tax question, nobody is going to get upset with Trump at a guy like John Harwood, who is a very creepy guy in a number of senses, who's saying, you know, economic advisors to the last two presidents have said your tax plan is no good. And we'll end up, you know, costing the government money. Oh, you can't give the people a tax cut because it's going to cost the government money. I mean, talk about boring, wonkish, inside the beltway baloney. People are sick of all that. They're sick of it. So it's...
Is there anything to...
There were some enlightening things last night.
Is there anything to Cruz's tax plan? I haven't looked at the details, but the way he described it last night was you pay nothing on the first $36,000, and you pay 10% after that, and that sounded like his personal income tax plan. If that's his whole plan, then maybe that's even better than Trump's.
Well, maybe. I mean, You always have to remember that Cruz's wife is a vice president of Goldman Sachs.
Oh, yeah.
He comes out of that sort of milieu. So he's very smart. I was told by somebody who saw him debate at Princeton that he was the finest collegiate debater he'd ever seen in his life. He was praised at Harvard Law School as being one of the smartest students ever at Harvard Law.
Yeah, I think even Alan Dershowitz praised him for that.
Yeah, that's right. So it's, but of course he's got a horrendous warmongering foreign policy. He's just, and I must say, I will always hold it against Cruz. And I can remember this so well. Of course, it was all staged. There was a group of persecuted Christians from the Middle East, bishops, priests, regular people.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
They were meeting in Washington, and he comes in and denounces them and all their fellow Christians for not being pro-Israel enough.
Yeah, it was the worst political thing I have ever seen, basically.
And, of course, I wanted to, if I'd been able to ask him, I'd say, hey, have you ever denounced any Israelis for being not pro-Christian enough?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, crickets.
to take persecuted people who've suffered for their faith, of course, the ones who've been martyred for their faith were not present, and to denounce them, who've kept to their faith and to their church under the most horrendous circumstances, I thought it was just sickening, and I will never have any respect or liking for Cruz in a fundamental basis. But still, I admire his abilities.
And also, he attacked the Fed. I mean, he attacked Fed policy.
Well, he was smart enough to mention gold.
Yeah.
He wanted money connected to gold.
Whereas my sense of things, and I don't think I can be contradicted on this, is that Rand's approach has been to try and talk about auditing the Fed, try and focus on the fiscal side of things, but really not criticize the Fed fundamentally because that will make him look kooky. But the funny thing is, in trying to awkwardly seem establishment, he's also made himself look kooky.
Well, I talked to an economist I won't name who was at a dinner with Rand where monetary policy was being discussed. And Rand shut him up and said, look, I don't want to hear about the gold standard. I'm not interested in the gold standard. I'm interested in the monetary reforms we can make to make things better while leaving the Fed at the center of the system.
Yeah, so there, yeah. Well, there you go.
That's Rand.
And I'm convinced that even though – now here's –
can't be Mitch McConnell's guy and not like the Fed.
Well, indeed. And I'll say because a minute ago I was telling you that I did predict something that came true. Well, I'm also – I can be very bad at this. And one thing I did even on your blog, Lou, or maybe it was on your blog that I confessed it. I don't know if I committed it on your blog, but I said that Ron shouldn't be talking so much about the Fed and monetary policy because it's too complicated for most people and they're not going to get it. I mean, that's like – the record producer who told the Beatles that groups with guitars are on their way out. Like that, talk about a ridiculous mistake, right? So I will admit I was wrong about that. And in fact, I was so wrong that I later said that I'm actually convinced that a lot of the reason Ron raised as much money as he did was that he covered the Fed issue because people could hardly believe there was a politician who brought the subject up. I think it was the key to a lot of his fundraising success. So I think let me say one other thing about Rand before I want to talk about Trump and some things he said that I didn't like, but here's a question Rand was fed. They were talking about the budget and they said, "Now look, Paul Ryan has a strong reputation for fiscal discipline and he's on board. Why not challenge that?" You say that's a myth. Yeah, by your standards he has a reputation for fiscal discipline, but you know, by your standards so did Stalin. Like, what difference does that make? He's been terrible. You look at his budgets, they're all gimmick. You know, they're all gimmicks. We talked about this episode number 5 of our new podcast, Contra Krugman, was all about Paul Ryan because that was Krugman's column. And Ryan's a fake. I mean, any money that he so-called saves, he immediately blows twice that on the military.
He's a neocon, Paul Ryan.
Yeah, how about that?
No, so he's for an aggressive permanent war foreign policies, for more spending on the military. Of course, Rand's for more spending on the military, too, tragically.
You can't accept the premise of the question being fed to you in a case like that, or when everybody's talking about Medicare, and then they turn to Rand and say, do these solutions sound like they'll work? And his answer is, well, you got to do something. No, that is not your answer. Because then you sound exactly like the rest of them. But, of course, he's too afraid to say, well, there's something fundamentally wrong with the program. Ron had no problem saying there's something fundamentally wrong with the program. None whatsoever, because, well, that's what I need to say. And
Ron would have said, you know, Ronald Reagan was right about that. Medicare is socialism. It's why I opposed it at the time. It's why we've had such tremendous trouble with it. It's why we need dramatic reform.
And, of course, it can't possibly be paid off given the numbers we're talking about. It can't be done. So don't tell me that you're being more humanitarian than I am by making promises that can't possibly be kept. What's humanitarian about that? All right.
And Ron always said, you know, older people who need it, I'm not for taking it away, but all younger people ought to be allowed to opt out in return for paying no more Medicare taxes or, for that matter, Social Security taxes. They opt out of the system. They don't get
anything
from it. That would be a huge, magnificent reform. But, of course, nobody can allow it. Nobody can discuss it. Because it would reduce the size of the state, and you're never allowed to do that. In fact, none of those guys, of course, are actually for reducing the state.
Well, it sounded like Carson was slightly tiptoeing toward that he would have an opt-out option. But even if that was his opinion, by the time he got elected and it was explained to him what was what, we would never hear that proposal again.
Well, also, his previous proposal was to abolish Medicare and Medicaid.
I know.
So he's already backed down from that. And somebody said, oh, you know, this is going to hurt you in Iowa, or whatever was the reason. He said he's re-examined that, and
Yeah, anyway. I've in the last 5 minutes, I've re-examined one of my fundamental positions. Yeah. All right, I want to get back to Trump, but let's take just a moment for these messages. Here's some good advice. Be an informed consumer and don't get scammed. There's been a surge in physical demand for gold, and the conditions are ripe for scammers. Oh, buy collectible coins. Buy coins with numismatic value. Get a leveraged gold account. Get this price protection plan. They're Scams, and Peter Schiff's free report, Classic Gold Scams and How to Avoid Getting Ripped Off, will help you avoid them. Schiff Gold, which is where I get all my own precious metals, is doing the public a tremendous service with this report. See, the trouble is the precious metals industry is an extremely low-margin one, so some dealers just can't resist the temptation to try to make it into a high-margin one at your expense. That's why you won't want to make any moves with regard to gold without checking out Peter Schiff's free report, which you can read at tomwoods.com/scams. You know what I've spent a fortune on over the years? Graphic design. Because that's not a skill I've been blessed with, to put it mildly. So every time I need something designed, I'm paying hundreds of dollars to a designer, or heaven help me, I'm trying to do it myself. And if you're a business owner, an entrepreneur, or a marketer, you know exactly what I mean. Well, I'm happy to say there is finally a solution for people like you and me. It's a wonderful new product just launching today, Moon Pixlar. It's drag and drop simple. Just use one of the 1,200 existing templates, drag and drop what you want, add your text, and before you know it, you've got a beautiful graphic without the frustration or the hundreds of dollars spent. And the sky's the limit. Banners, logos, business cards, infographics, blog post graphics, website headers, Facebook posts, flyers, ad images, and on and on and on. Plus, get three awesome bonuses when you check it out through tomwoods.com/moon. All right, now Trump said some things that are really, really, I think, pretty bad. One of them was, well, how are you going to deal with entitlements? And his answer was, well, when I bring all the jobs back from China and Mexico, we'll have such a robust economy that we'll grow our way out. I mean, that's classic neocon.
No, it's just, or, you know, whatever.
I mean, the protectionism part isn't, but the whole thing about we can grow our way out of problems.
Well, that's what all the, that's just the Republican line on everything. That's
yeah,
why
that's
nothing
true.
Has to be cut. So it's, yeah, he's wrong. But of course, again, how's that different from Ryan or Boehner or Bush or Rubio or?
Oh, it's true. But the point is, I expect Trump
him to, be a little,
to be different from those
I
people.
Agree.
You know, I yeah.
He wasn't different.
And then secondly, at the end, when he was giving his closing statement and he's talking about ways that America doesn't win anymore, and he called the Iran deal a catastrophe, which he had not said earlier.
Terrible.
Yeah. So that's definitely
pandering,
no good.
Terrible. And in fact, it was that the only remark on foreign policy the whole night?
Yeah, probably because it was a debate on the economy, and yet you know
that
again.
I thought he was going to talk about the Trans-Pacific Agreement, which is a horrendous thing.
Yeah, that's what I thought he meant. That's what I thought he was leading up to.
Horrible.
When he said the worst agreement I've ever seen. I thought it was going to be that. Yeah, and the funny thing is, even though this was billed as a debate on the economy, again, with Ron in there, he would have said, well, you know, sorry, but if you're going to try and treat these issues like they're hermetically sealed compartments, like the economy and foreign policy, it is draining us to have this philosophy of just ongoing war, and then when intervention leads to problems, we have more war to fix the problem caused by the first one. This is an ingredient here, and we know that in his interviews he went out of his way to do this, and this frustrated a lot of his campaign team, which of course wanted him to shut up about foreign policy. But meanwhile we were all cheering, let Ron be Ron.
Well, he would, if you know, in talking about what he did about the entitlement program, he'd say, well, first of all, you bring all the troops home.
Yeah.
Get rid of the empire. You stop trying to run the world and worry about our own people, our own problems. Then we can decide what to do about our domestic problems.
Yeah, exactly right.
And then there would, of course, be a vast amount of either, I would hope, cut in government spending or at least reallocation. But anything's better than murdering masses of people all around the world every day like the U.S. government does now, and it seems like forever they've done it.
Let me ask you one more thing before we wrap up. The people in the undercard debate who are polling at basically 1% or lower, as far as I can see, they're all at that level.
Yes.
What's the reason that they're in there? I mean, I understand some people run for president just because they know that this means that elevates their profile, gives them free publicity, their speaking fees will go up and whatever. But when you're basically relegated to this undercard debate and you look like a fool, what possible benefit are you getting?
Well, they all have, of course, gigantic egos. And I guess they consider it better than nothing. But one of the things we have to remember, the structures of these debates, the undercard business, how many are on stage, who the moderators are, who's running the debate and so forth, is all decided by the Republican National Committee. And I hate to agree with Ed Meese, but Ed Meese said today, really, you have to blame the RNC for everything that was wrong with this debate. They're the ones who set this up. This is not CNBC's decision to have the undercard debate. And I was so glad, by the way, I didn't see it, because I heard all the CNBC people saying, well, Lindsey Graham won that one. Boy, he hit it out of the park. He was great. So I thought, no. Horrible. But anyway, this is Reince Priebus. We need to ask him that question. These things are, of course, first of all, they're not debates. They're forums. But why, you know, why is it Megyn Kelly's and Becky Quick and people like that asking the questions, or the horrible John Harwood? Why do they get that? Why are these the questions? So I think the RNC's at fault for this, among many, many other things.
Right. Right. But then today they're pretending that, oh, my goodness,
yes, you know,
CNBC really stuck it to us.
We were blindsided, yeah.
Yeah, right. How could we have known? Murray Sabrin sent out a note last night that I thought was absolutely right on. He said, and you probably got this too, he says, again, 10 candidates on the debate stage is an awful format. There should be no more than 5 candidates in a one-hour debate. And the questions, for the most part, were awful as well. I don't care what current governors have done and what former governors did. They're running to be president. Stick to federal issues. I have been in 3 campaigns where debates focused on the issues. Why can't supposedly seasoned journalists do the same? And here's what he recommends. He says, the CNBC crew should have asked all the candidates the following and cut them off when they do not answer the question. What should be done to the tax code? What government programs would you abolish or downsize? Why should the Federal Reserve manipulate short-term interest rates? What regulations would you abolish? Just those 4 questions. Then after they answered the questions, the moderators should ask the candidates to critique each other. That's how a debate with 10 candidates should have been conducted. I agree with that completely. That would have been a much more interesting debate.
Of course, it would have been terrific, but of course, you can't ask those kinds of questions. You can't imply that anything should be cut in the federal government. That's a no-no. That's a no-no for the Republican Party as well as the Democrats, for the media as well as the candidates. So it's, but he's exactly right. These things are just horrendous. On the other hand, I think it is culling the field. I mean, all these guys, Pataki and all the rest of them, may be in the next debate, which I think is in about 2 weeks now. But We know who the serious people are. We know who the key people are, and it's not. There's plenty of undercard people in the overcard, and maybe we'll see some of them do us all a favor. Maybe Chris Christie will go home to New Jersey. Although I must say he's an entertaining rogue. So you know he does bring that. You can't say the rest of these guys with maybe Trump is is an exception to this. The rest of these are not entertaining people. And in fact, after the debate, Bush was being interviewed, and he said, well, I'm not a performer. If you want a performer, you need to elect Trump or something, you know. Well,
yeah.
Of course, a politician has to be a performer, because if you're going to appeal to the public en masse, you have to, it doesn't mean you're a phony. Ron Paul was a great performer. He was great at meeting people, great at convincing people, always wanted to, just loved meeting people, would stand for hours taking photos with thousands of kids. He loved that stuff. That's why he was a great politician. So if you don't have those qualities, things are tough for you. But these guys are all, who wants John Kasich to come over and have a cup of coffee?
Yeah, stay the heck away.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly. I know it. Well, I'm going to make sure and link on, the show notes for today will be at tomwoods.com/522. And there I will link to Lou Rockwell's Political Theater. Of course, lourockwell.com, I mentioned at the beginning of the show. But Lou Rockwell's Political Theater is, of your 2 blogs, the one that you run entirely on your own and that deals with issues like this, what's going on in the race, day after day. I love it. I mean, I visit it multiple times a day.
That is
absolutely true every day. I love this thing. So you can get it through tomwoods.com/522 if you're on the road or something. Or you could just go to lourockwell.com and look for political theater and click on it, and you're just going to love what you see. Well, Lou, you get 2 weeks of peace, I guess, and then we're back to the grind again.
I can't wait, Tom. It's a lot of fun.
Thanks a lot. All right, on this show, which runs Monday through Friday, I cover all kinds of issues of interest to libertarians, whatever it is, whether it's the FDA or Somalia or foreign policy or the Fed or current events or whatever, historical episodes. I've done episodes on the Bolshevik Revolution, all kinds of things to make you a smarter libertarian in 30 minutes a day. So do please check out the show. I'm cranking out episodes like crazy. This was episode number 522. Lots of great topics coming up. I appreciate all you good listeners, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.